You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. This is a Tuesday. Wait, no. This is the Tuesday show, right? Yeah. I don't know what day it is anymore. Whatever. We're here to talk about it. Whatever is going on in the Celtics world, which isn't much. We're John Corrales of MassLive.com, Jay King, the kid of The Athletic, inviting you to subscribe to the podcast on the new Himalaya podcast app. Download Himalaya, subscribe to us, and it will start giving you more options on their feed, giving you more curated posts and podcasts and stuff. So subscribe to us via the Himalaya podcast app or wherever podcasts exist. Tell your smart speaker to play Locked On Celtics. Quite frankly, we've been talking for a little bit here before we started recording, and we don't know what the hell to talk about.
We got nothing. I got nothing, at least.
You got nothing. So we'll start with, and the beauty of what we do is we'll say we've got nothing, and then we'll go for an hour talking about nothing.
Just what the gods do.
Let's start with this. We're all trying to figure out what the hell is going to happen with Kyrie Irving. And if he stays, great, he stays. If he goes, how does he go? How does he leave? And what happens next? So if he just leaves and signs with somebody else, then the Celtics don't have a ton of money. They're far enough over the cap. They're a tax team. Where losing $21 million doesn't really get them anything. Now, one scenario that was brought up, Brian Robb brought it up. Other people, I think, have mentioned it. I wrote about it on Mass Live. If Kyrie Irving decides, I'm going to help you guys out, I'm going to hook you up, I'm going to go to a team and I'm going to tell them, you can't just sign me. You got to sign. I'm going to do a sign and trade. So you have to acquire me via a trade with the Celtics. The advantage there is the Celtics would send like something else, a pick, a player, whatever it is, as a kind of a thank you. And the Celtics would get back a trade exception, which if you need to know, read my thing on MassLive.com. I broke it all down. Essentially, the Celtics will get $32+ million so they could trade for somebody else, not to sign somebody else, but to trade for somebody else, which means they could bring in like a Mike Conley or a Bradley Beal or somebody like that if the other team is amenable to that. Problem is, Jay, it doesn't seem like Kyrie would want to go to a team that would be willing to help the Celtics get better. So it really feels like the Celtics are still kind of stuck. When's the last time that happened? I don't
know. Like, it happened with the Rockets and Chris Paul when Chris Paul just wanted to go to the Rockets.
And that was a different situation.
And was going to leave no matter what from the Clippers. I just can't remember the last time something like that ever actually happened. Like, almost always, if a top free agent leaves, they're going to cap space.
Sure.
And they're going to, whether it's Kevin Durant with the Warriors or LeBron James with the Lakers, like, you're going to a place with cap space. And this summer especially, a lot of interesting destinations have cap space. With the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nets, the Knicks, you know, there are a long list of teams that will have opportunities to get these guys, whether it's Kyrie, Kawhi, Durant, Jimmy Butler. Like, there are a lot of guys worth that type of money that, and there are a lot of teams that will be out there. I think that's a very long shot possibility, the trade exception route. But I mean, the Celtics are very, they're creative with things, but I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I agree. And it's an avenue. It's a thing. It could happen. But it's, and I wrote this exact thing on Mass Live. It's something that's more possible, less probable. And it's not something that that we should count on. It would be great if Kyrie Irving told whatever team it was that you have to do this, but he's under no obligation to do that. And you're right. Nobody really goes and does that. The Celtics could push for it. They could say, they could try to guilt him into it and say, hey, you said you were coming back, and now we're planning on everything that you know, planning our whole offseason on you coming back, and now you're leaving us, you're screwing us, so you owe us. I suppose they could try that route. But if he decides to go to the Knicks have no reason to give the Celtics an opportunity to sign somebody like, or I'm sorry, trade for somebody like Conley or Beal and stay good when you're in the same division, because you're part of the reason for signing Kyrie away would be to make yourself better, but also make your opponent worse. So it's really an unlikely thing, if we're being honest, to happen. Just how it is.
Facts.
So it seems like if Kyrie leaves, is there any way that Kyrie could leave without hurting the Celtics significantly? It doesn't seem like it, right? If he leaves, the Celtics are kind of stuck.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much they can do to replace him. And that's always been the case. Like, it's kind of been Kyrie or bust, as far as that goes. And for a while, things looked very promising on that front. And then now, I'm not sure. So we'll see. It's going to be a really interesting summer, because I think the Celtics know there are a lot of different paths they can take. And some of the decisions aren't their own. Whether it's Kyrie's decision on whether to stay, Al Horford's decision on whether to pick up his option and or stay, Aaron Baines, like, there are a lot of different factors that will go into the direction they take this summer. And the Anthony Davis pursuit is another thing. That's not their decision. Like, they can load things up, and it's not their final call. It's David Griffin, and ultimately it's Anthony Davis, who, if he takes off his trade request, if he decides he wants to stay and play with Zion, who may be a generational talent, then Celtics are out of luck there too. So there are a lot of different things, a lot of moving factors this summer, and I'm just really intrigued by this summer, because the past few years it's been pretty obvious what the Celtics wanted to do. They wanted to go after Al Horford. They wanted to go after Kevin Durant, and they wanted to go after Gordon Hayward. And now it's like, okay, yeah, they want to keep Kyrie and go after Anthony Davis, but what the hell happens if they don't? And that's what I'm really intrigued by, because there's been so much foreshadowing about the Anthony Davis talk, but there hasn't been much discussion about what happens if none of that comes to fruition. And so I'm fascinated. I've said it so many times. I'm fascinated by the summer. I'm eager for what happens and to kind of consume whatever goes on.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about that right after the break? Remember, subscribe on the new Himalaya podcast app or wherever podcasts exist. We'll be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We'll be right back. So what the hell happens this summer is going to be a great question. Like, so many different variables in play. So if Kyrie leaves, then what? If Kyrie stays, it's probably because they've made the deal for Anthony Davis. Let me ask you this, Jay. I did this last night on the solo pod. Do you think there's a real chance that
I definitely listened to it, by the way.
I'm sure you did. I know you do. Do you think that Anthony Davis, that the Pelicans really trying to keep Anthony Davis is a real thing? Or is that just a signal that they're putting out there to put pressure on a team like the Celtics to give up both Jalen and Jason?
I think that's probably a real thing. If I were the Pelicans and I knew I had the option to draft Zion Williamson, who I think is going to be a super duper star, and I had a chance to put a mega extension on the table for Anthony Davis this summer, and there was at least some possibility that Anthony Davis played with Zion Williamson a couple times and was like, oh shit, I should play with this guy and stay here and win a lot of games with this supremely talented young dude and grow old together with this guy and do it in New Orleans where nobody has ever really won like that. And it would be really cool if they both did that. Then yes, as long as there's a chance, I would, if I'm New Orleans, go after that, because right now you have one top 10 talent in Anthony Davis, one guy who a lot of people think will emerge as a top 10 talent in Zion. And they're both very young. Like, Anthony Davis is still 26. So if you get Zion and 3 years later, Anthony Davis is in the second year of his mega extension, and all of a sudden Zion's an all-NBA guy and Anthony Davis is an all-NBA guy, and it's just an unguardable front court, and you have Drew Holiday and whoever else David Griffin puts around him. Like, to me, if I were Anthony Davis, I would at least think really long and hard about that. If he could go somewhere else and win immediately, whether it's in Boston or with Kevin Durant somewhere or with Kyrie and Kevin Durant somewhere, then he has to consider that, obviously. But to me, like, the prospect of playing with Zion and playing with Drew Holiday and playing with a competent front office that looks ready to move the Pelicans into a different stratosphere than they've been lately, I think that's at least palatable and maybe something Anthony Davis will look at, but who knows? I think more likely that he probably still hits the trade market, and then we'll see what happens from there, whether it's the Lakers or the Celtics or somebody else. But obviously, if the Celtics are willing to put all their chips on the table, which probably means Kyrie's coming back, then I think they're at least close to the front runners, maybe the front runners. But everything's complicated this summer. It really is. And the stakes are so high because there's no obvious fallback plan if the Celtics don't get Kyrie and Davis or Kyrie and or Davis. So.
Right.
A lot of pressure on Ainge and Zarin and the bunch. Like,
there is no obvious fallback plan. The next question comes.
And what's crazy is all they had to do is not screw up this season.
I know.
Like, if the Celtics had just had a regular season, like win 55 or 56 games and not hate each other and not fight with each other throughout the season and not have so many issues, then Kyrie would probably be like, yeah, this is a spot. And especially if we can get Anthony Davis, like, hell yeah, I want to be here. But instead, it was just like kind of worst case scenario where they won 49 games and Kyrie was pissed off for a while and Brad Stevens didn't handle everything well and the young players didn't either and Kyrie didn't either. Here we are 1 year after Kyrie declared he was going to stay, and God, that sure feels like a long time ago.
That was an extraordinarily long time ago. Oh God, now that I'm just looking back at this past season, this really could be the season that Danny Ainge regrets. Like, all of the things that he's done to put this team on track, two separate, very viable tracks, now all of a sudden, it's all potentially falling apart. And partly because what you said, that these guys just couldn't get it together. And partly because Kyrie Irving is maybe one of the biggest wild card superstars that there is out there. Like, there's, well, okay, I shouldn't say that, because Kevin Durant's a pretty big wild card. But someone who is so prone to emotional swings, who is, I don't know, temperamental, emotional, moody is a word that I've heard a lot. He's just, if it was any other superstar, that this might be different. That it might be somebody who's willing to say, okay, I'm not going to carry myself the way I've carried myself this past season. Really, I just wonder if 10 years from now, we're going to look back on this season, and Danny Ainge is going to look back on this season and think, we came into it with all of this promise, and everything fell apart. It was the wrong star. It was the wrong mix. It was the wrong ages. Like, if all of these guys were 5 years older, I think they would have been able to figure it out a little bit better. But the fact that they're all so young and their heads were in places where they couldn't get past certain things that were bothering them. And that's not, I'm not just saying like the quote unquote young guys, like Kyrie, I'm counting Kyrie in this. Like, if Kyrie was a 30-year-old or 31 or 32-year-old star versus a 27-year-old star, like, that would have changed how he thought about the league. And the same for everybody else. Man, so many thoughts flying through my head.
So what does Kyrie need to be happy?
Who knows?
Someone was talking about this with me and brought up the interesting point. Like, Paul Pierce, until he got Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, like, he grew up probably before that, but there was that stretch, like, when they played the Pacers and he came out with a bandage on his head.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he had a stretch where it was like, what are you doing, Paul Pierce? Like, why are you not carrying yourself like you should and like the organization needs you to? And, like, it's easy to forget Kyrie's only 26. Like, Kyrie has accomplished so much. I think Brad Stevens said it. It's like, at 26, for him to have 6 All-Star games is a joke. And it is.
It is.
And it's like, he's done so much. He's won a title. He's been in 3 finals. He's demanded a trade. He's played for bad teams. He's played for great teams. He's played for this most dramatic Celtics team of the last 15, 20 years. And it's easy to forget, look, he's really young. And I think for him and for a lot of the players on the Celtics and for Brad Stevens and for Danny Ainge even, this year will be a great learning experience if they allow it to be. And so I want to see how Kyrie comes back from this. I do want to see if he capable of changing? Like, is he willing to change? Is he able to sit back, examine this Celtics season and think, part of this was my fault. Like, it wasn't all my fault. Like, a lot of these young guys wanted more touches, more opportunities, more minutes. The dynamic was just all wrong. Gordon Hayward wasn't healthy. Brad Stevens didn't do a great job, admittedly. But is he able to look back at it and think, okay, I screwed up with leadership. I shouldn't have publicly criticized guys. I screwed up by dragging the mood down during the middle of the season. I screwed up in these ways in the playoffs when I wasn't as good as I thought I would be in the postseason. is he able to look back on all of it and learn from it? Because if he is, I think this is going to be the greatest learning experience of his life. Because for the first time, the entire spotlight was on him. And everything he screwed up was magnified tenfold. And I think that goes for a lot of the Celtics. I think it goes for Brad Stevens. I think it goes for some of the other guys, but especially for Kyrie, because he was scrutinized more than anyone else on that roster, maybe more than anyone else in the league this season. And if he's able to look back on it and just admit everything he did wrong and be totally self-aware about what happened and his role in it. And I think he could come out of this such a better player and such a better person even.
I agree. And this is one of,
and I don't know what the odds are of him doing that, but
I don't either. And I am right there with you. It's one of the things that I've said about him from throughout the season. Like, I am fascinated by people like Kyrie Irving. Like, other people are maybe annoyed by him. I think on top of all of the basketball stuff, the progression that he's made as a player, the progression he's making as a person is fascinating to me, and I'm extraordinarily curious about what he's going to become. How do you respond from this? I've said this a bunch of times here, wrote about it. Kyrie Irving invited the spotlight. He turned on all of the spotlights, trained them onto the center stage, came out and sucked. And that's hard for somebody like him to accept, because all season long he's been saying, I'm going to come out here when all of these lights are on and prove to you that I'm who I say I am. And he didn't, and he couldn't. And it's not like he had one bad game. He had an entirely bad series, four straight games in a row where he was not good. And at least one of those you'd think he would have stepped up. Okay, so fine. Credit Milwaukee's defense, credit this, credit that. But the bottom line is Kyrie comes out of this looking like less than Damian Lillard, less than the other guys that he compares himself to. So what does this do? Does he get humbled?
Although Damian Lillard just got humbled by the Warriors.
Sure, like, he did. I mean,
like, if Kyrie had played normal teams in the first and second round, like, he might have just blitzed the Pacers. Like, if the Celtics had played the Nuggets, shit, they might have beat the Nuggets. So you get exposed by different levels of defenses, different levels of teams. And I thought Kyrie was exposed in the second round. I thought the Celtics were exposed. And it wasn't just Kyrie, obviously. But
right. But there's absolutely a level of nuance there. The opponent matters. The matchups matter. That's what the playoffs are. But the fact is that Lillard hit the game winner. Lillard beat the Nuggets. And losing to the Warriors, even in four, that's not unexpected. So for the Celtics, for Kyrie, he needs to come back from this. Like, he needs to, what am I trying to say here? What Lillard did this postseason is show that he's a leader, that he is a star, that he is capable of taking a team to heights beyond what is expected of them. They didn't have Nurkic. Nurkic was a big deal. They beat the second seed. They beat a higher seed, and they advanced to the conference finals. The Celtics, behind Irving, who called publicly for this moment, didn't. They beat one team without its star, and they lost they were unceremoniously dismissed by a team that had its star and was still even shorthanded I don't want to make a big deal of the Brogdon thing, but like, that's a guy that was important to them all season, and they didn't have him, and they didn't even feel the need to bring him back, you know, any sooner than they absolutely, like, they didn't need to rush him back or anything like that. There was never any urgency to bring him back. So, whatever it is, the perception is what it is. And for Kyrie, he does have to have this kind of introspection, right? Like, he has to be the guy that looks at himself and says, how do I get to this point next year where we're in this situation, and how do I lift the game? How do I lift my game? How do I lift my team? And that's his big challenge.
And Brad Stevens said something like this in the playoffs, and he was talking about Giannis, but I think it fits with Kyrie now. And what he was saying about Giannis is that the top players in the league all improve at a rate that even the other guys don't. And it may not change their stats as much as everybody else, but like, because of how much they see, because of the different types of defenses, because of all the focus on them, like, they just have to improve based on everything they see and all the different attention they get, everything. And I think it's the same way with Kyrie. Like, Kyrie for the first time was the focal point of a playoff defense. And he played two great defenses. The Pacers, even without Oladipo, were a great defense. The Bucks were the top defense in the league during the regular season. He played two great defenses. And those defenses, for the first time in the playoffs, he didn't have LeBron on his side. And he was a focal point. And that's a different test. And so I think, like Steven said about Giannis, when you see those things, and you get five games against the best defense in the league, and they are game planning every night to take away everything you do best, then that's a different challenge. And that's a different learning experience. And so like I said, if he's just able to reflect on everything and watch the tape and think about everything, reflect and just proceed and use this tough experience as a lesson, then he's going to come out a much better player, and he's going to be even better next season. And he was great this year. For most of the year, he was really great.
Yeah, and I think it's important to not let the last four games color what the first 90 whatever games it was. He was very, very good all season long. The fact that it ended the way it did, definitely, it changes the perception of the entire thing. Now, I'm not a Game of Thrones guy, but I did see everybody.
Oh, but I am, baby.
But okay, so tell me if I'm on par with this. It feels like a Game of Thrones thing where the ending sucked and people are complaining about the ending, but if you're watching from the beginning to the end, you got to sit there and be like, the entire show was great. The ending sucked, and it really sucks that the ending sucked, but you can't lose sight that the entire show was great.
With Kyrie?
I'm saying, yeah, for Kyrie this past season.
Oh, yeah, so Game of Thrones is like an all-time great show for like six seasons. Kyrie for, what, 6 months was like really good. Like, damn good, but also like kind of frustrating because he was criticizing people, probably saying a lot of the wrong things.
Not, it's not like an apples to apples thing, but I'm trying.
Yeah, so I'm just reacting to your Game of Thrones. I don't hate the comparison. It's not the worst I've ever heard, especially from someone who's dumbass enough to not watch Game of Thrones.
I've never watched it. Never got into it. I just never even tuned in from the beginning. Never.
Dumbass.
It's not the genre that I felt like, oh, I gotta tune into this. And never.
That's why it took me like 4 years to start it. And then I always thought like, yeah, come on, like wizards and bullshit like that, incest. Like, come on, man. Like this shit ain't for me. And then I watched and I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
It's for real.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It has my highest recommendation until the last two seasons.
Okay. I don't know that I'm ever going to watch it, but And it's
and even those were fine. They just didn't live up to the rest of it.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. I'm not, like I said, I'm not, it's not my general cup of tea, but whatever. If that's, I'm not criticizing the show. If I'm not criticizing people who like the show, I'm definitely not being one of those people who's like proud of like, oh, I never got into Game of Thrones. Like, I just, it's a matter of fact statement. Like, I never did. So, you know, whatever. It's, it is what it is. So I'm, you know, but I've followed enough through the people's reactions to know what people are thinking of the show. And that's why I felt like I could make that comparison. All right.
Congrats, bro.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back to, with this show that has no direction at all and finish it. Whatever. We'll be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. There, stick around. Well, there was a bunch of stuff going on around the league. I don't know if we want to talk about that. The Warriors got to the NBA Finals for the fifth straight time, matching the Celtics as the only other NBA team to get to five straight NBA Finals.
Okay, and I have a point about Kevin Durant.
Okay.
I know everyone at this point kind of thinks he's probably going to leave.
Yeah.
How would you not come back to have the first four-peat since Bill Russell?
I mean, I don't know. How? Why would like, you? Why
shit.
Would you
like,
leave?
Think of the rarefied air that is.
Sure.
Like, but, say all you want about him going to the Warriors and how unfair it is, whatever. If you win four straight for the first time since Russell, if you're the first team in the history of the modern NBA to win four straight, like, that's a big fucking deal. And granted, they still have to win their third straight to sure. give them a chance to win four straight. And they'll either have to play the Bucks, who have looked great, or the Raptors, who, if they beat the Bucks, will have played great. But I don't know. If I had a chance to win a fourth straight NBA title, it would take a whole lot.
Yeah.
To get me to say no. Also, Steph Curry has a great leather jacket on ESPN right now.
Oh, really? I'm not watching it right now. So
it's a beautiful leather jacket. Yeah,
I'm going to pop it on as we speak.
It kind of looks like a Chris Mannix special.
Oh, shit. Okay, hold on. Now I got to watch the Chris Mannix special. That's late. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I see it.
Yeah.
Oh my god, see? that's like a serious like motorcycle jacket.
This yeah, it's is a like, Chris Mannix special, I'm telling you.
Oh, that's like a legit like, wow. Is this going to be the style now? This is. I knew I should have kept all of the shit that I gave away when I was younger. Although, I'm like three sizes bigger. Like three times as big, I should say. So I couldn't fit into any of that stuff anyway. But back to your point about Kevin Durant. This is why so much of what we say and so much of what people talk about on sports talk radio is just total bullshit, because I agree with you and probably 90% of the people listening would agree with you, but we're not the best player on the planet. And
neither is Kevin Durant.
Well,
not even the best player on his team, but
whatever.
I just had to point it out.
Sure, fine, whatever. Second best, third best, fourth best, whatever it is.
I will state this on the podcast. I'm not sure if I've ever said this on the podcast. I think Steph Curry is the best player in the world.
No, you
when healthy.
That. Yes, I know you. And, I know you do. I know you.
And he hasn't done anything to dispel that theory during these last five games when KD's been hurt. Let me just point that out.
So that's fine, but whatever. But Durant's in the team picture of players at Steph's level. There's like three or four guys that are, you know, it's Durant, it's LeBron, it's Steph,
Harden.
It's Harden. Like, so he's in that stratosphere.
Giannis. Giannis.
Right, right, exactly. Those type of Kawhi, like those guys.
Yep.
So however you want to rank them, I don't give a shit. But my point is we're not them.
We're so not the gods.
We don't understand.
We're just the pod gods.
How they're thinking, right? Like, we don't get what it's like to sit there and have this feeling of comparison to the all-time greats. And you're trying to figure out how you're going to craft your Hall of Fame legacy. Like, that's a level of... Like,
I'll tell you what would help. Four straight titles.
Sure. Like, that's an excellent
maybe four
point.
Straight finals MVPs.
That's an excellent point. If he's sitting there and he's trying to compare himself, if Durant's trying to compare himself to LeBron, getting another championship, getting four straight, getting five straight, getting six straight, whatever it is, like, these Warriors have a chance to do something that hasn't been done since those Celtics teams of the 60s. In the 60s, where there were eight teams in the NBA.
And they were all out of shape white boys who smoked three packs a day.
I mean, it was a very different era. Like, to do that now in the free agency, like, this is just, hey, this is coming from a Celtics guy. Like, to put a team like this together at this time, like, it's definitely more impressive, because free agency tears things apart. And we're seeing that team slowly being torn apart by the pressures of free agency, by the pressures of ego and the money and the fame and the legacy. Like, that stuff didn't matter back then. There was no free agency. There wasn't even that thought back then. Like, you got who you got. You got territorial draft picks. They got Tommy Heinsohn. They got Bob Cousy. Well, actually, they didn't do the Bob Cousy thing. They passed on him. But, like, you could just pick a guy. It didn't matter where you were in the draft lottery. You could just take the guy from Holy Cross if you wanted him, because he was the local guy. Like, it was so different. So to do this now, in this time, with all the player movement, all that stuff, it's definitely more impressive. The fact that they could do it. But at the same time, if you're Durant and you were like, yeah, I could do this. I can get to so this is five straight finals. He wasn't there for all of them, but he could sit there and say, well, if I go to the East, if I go to New York and I bring Kyrie or Kemba or whomever with me, I can get to the finals. I can get through the East. I can do that again. And now I get to beat these guys. Like, what's more impressive to you if you're Kevin Durant? Do you sit there with all of these guys and win another one with them, or go to the East and think to yourself, hey, I could beat them for my next title? Like, that might be more appealing to him.
Till he gets waxed.
Yeah, but he doesn't think like that. You know, like, he doesn't think like that.
No, I'm just having fun. No, but yeah,
obviously.
No.
Like,
and there are so many other things that go into it, too. It could be just like, I want to live in New York. Or,
right,
like,
I mean,
like, there are so many different aspects of it that go beyond,
no one
okay,
wants
I could
to
win
go
a title
to New York
here.
To think like, oh, I can't wait to play for the Knicks. Like, they all say, like, the Knicks, the legacy and blah, blah, blah. Like, but come on. The Knicks are just the joke of a franchise under Dolan. They're so poorly run. The only thing they have going for them is Madison Square Garden in New York City. Like, you have this arena that everybody, like, mythologizes, and the city that's, it's an awesome city. Like, New York is a great city. It's a lot of fun, and to be a rich 27-year-old living in New York City or 30-year-old living in New York City, like, good for you. It's the East Coast media mecca. If you've got this bigger plan in mind and you have these businesses, like, it all makes sense for him to go to New York, and regardless of Dolan and all that other crap. But he doesn't think about the stuff that we think about. He doesn't look at it like getting waxed by Giannis. Like, Giannis to him, Durant's probably like, Giannis, so what? I'm better than Giannis. Like, that's probably what he's thinking.
And he might be right.
I mean, he's Giannis with the jumper. Like, if Giannis gets the jumper, he becomes Kevin Durant. Like, That's really what it boils down to, right?
No. No, they are two incredibly different players with incredibly different strengths. But I like the comparison.
I mean, tall guy, long, gets to the rim. Like, I mean, basically they become a very similar player, I think.
All right. Yeah, they're very, very different, albeit similar players.
Okay, fine. What else? What else is there? Magic Johnson?
I'm just trying not to get roasted, because last time we were on a podcast, I got roasted at the end. And
I did.
Get I'm just trying to avoid teeing you up for a roast.
Look, man, we just talk, and this is the beauty. Like, there are times I get roasted too. So,
sometimes I'm the one who sees a death on the podcast.
It's just you say what you say, and whatever. If somebody gets you, look, sometimes you're just gonna get dunked on. That's just how it
sometimes
is.
Sometimes you get got.
You can't stop playing. If you're afraid of getting dunked on, just got to get out of the game if that's the case. So let's keep going. Let's just keep going. We're going to talk about Magic.
Oh, man. Oh, I mean, man.
Talking about laying waste to a franchise.
Okay, let me ask you the question. Who had the more electric first take appearance, Magic or Terry Rozier?
Oh, Magic, by far. By far.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just by the sheer weight of what he's doing. I mean, he is really tearing down the ownership and their new president. Like Terry Rozier.
He said Rob Pelinka backstabbed him.
Oh, my God.
But here's the thing. This is everything Magic wanted. He wanted to be able to tamper. He wanted to be able to say, like, the Lakers should get Kyrie and Kawhi, which he did say. And he wanted to be able to do that. And now he can do it.
Sure,
so,
of course.
Respect.
But, like, as far as, like, Terry Rozier said what he said, and I mean, from us, it was fine. Like, to you heard it and you're like, yeah, it confirms everything that we thought, but it's like, it's still at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, but you're Terry Rozier. Like, when Terry Rozier sits there and says, oh, what'd you sacrifice? Well, I sacrificed my talent. But like, okay, you're good. You're a good NBA player. Like, in the scheme of NBA players, you're okay. But like, to sit there and tell me you sacrifice your talent, like, you're still Terry Rozier. Like, come on. Like, Magic Johnson is up there telling everybody that the current owner of the Lakers is too emotionally influenced by people who don't know a damn thing about basketball, that Rob Pelinka is out there stabbing Magic Johnson in the back, that, I mean, all of these things. He is really tearing down an iconic.
It was an electric first take appearance.
I mean, really. And what makes it even better, and really what takes the cake here, is that he did it on the day that Frank Vogel was introduced. Like,
was like 2 hours before it.
Frank Vogel got introduced, and no one is talking a damn thing about what Frank Vogel. Like, if you're listening right now, you might not even realize that Frank Vogel got introduced as the Lakers head coach today. Like, that's, and when he quit, it was when Magic quit, he did it on the day where Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki had their, like, last regular season. So,
although, I will say this. Okay. So Magic, from what we know, he thinks he got backstabbed. And he thinks there were sources whispering behind his back.
Yes.
And he thinks that a lot of the noise around the Lakers was caused by other people who should have been working under him, but were undermining him instead. I kind of love the move to just go on first take and just blast everyone. Like, man, middle finger to you, middle finger to you. I think it's hilarious. And I have no idea what the backstabbing level was. I have no idea what the work environment was over there. I'm not going to pretend to be a Lakers insider, but if there was all of that going on, like he thinks there was, I'm cool with him going up there and naming names and throwing Rob Pelinka under the bus and saying what was wrong with Jeannie Buss and being like, yeah, at least I put my name to it. At least, at least I'm up here doing it to your face. So I, in some ways I kind of respected that. So if we're going to link this to Terry Rozier, there was none of that with Terry Rozier. Like nobody was bad to him in Boston. If anything, like the coaching staff, especially Brad Stevens, was very loyal to him no matter what.
How many times did we sit there after an availability, a post game, where Brad Stevens just out of nowhere
rebound Terry Rozier had was a turning point of the game.
reached out of nowhere to mention Terry Rozier.
And granted, from Terry's perspective, I'm sure it's very different. He probably thought he should have played more minutes. He probably thought he should have got different opportunities that he did. He probably thought he should have gotten the ball more often and that Stevens was the reason why he didn't. But Stevens always went out of his way. And even Terry, objectively, he did not have a great season. His true shooting percentage was low, didn't have a good assist rate. Two-point shooting percentage was very low, never drew fouls. The Celtics were minus 39 for the season when he was on the court. He was the only regular with a minus plus minus. He didn't have a good season, and no matter what, Brad stuck with him. And then for him to go on TV and be like, this was Brad's problem, and this was what was wrong with our team, and it's different than if Magic is thinking guys are backstabbing him all the time, because the Celtics, at least publicly, were always in Terry's corner.
Absolutely. The thing with Rozier, not to bring all of this back up, but he...
We're just having a first take debate, man.
It really is. It really is.
First take has been electric lately.
But Rozier knew what was coming. None of this was a surprise. None of it was a surprise to him. He knew coming in that you're going to be the backup. This is what you're going to be. And he couldn't handle it. He just couldn't handle it. He came out and said, what he came out and said was, I couldn't do what they needed me to do. From the minute of the final whistle, he sat there in the Fiserv forum and immediately post game was talking about the bullshit that he went through. The entire thing was about him. Now, Magic also was about him, but it was the way it was framed, the way it came off was the people who are in charge did him wrong in a way, not like that Terry Rozier feels like the victim. Magic Johnson comes off as the actual victim, and that it doesn't matter that he's the victim. What matters is the people who are in charge right now are incompetent. What Magic said made the Lakers look incompetent. What Terry Rozier said made him look selfish. It's the best way I can put it.
But also, Magic was kind of selfish, man.
Oh, sure. But
the only reason he did that was to make himself look better.
What's the takeaway?
He had already announced his resignation without telling anyone else in the organization beforehand.
But what's the takeaway?
What a ride Magic Johnson
has been on. Oh, my God. It's awesome. But, at the end, you're sitting there saying, when Terry Rozier said what he said, no one is sitting there. Well, there are people, but, few people are sitting there thinking, oh, man, Terry Rozier got done wrong. Most people are like, yeah, but in the end, you're still Terry Rozier. You knew you were supposed to be a backup, but you couldn't handle being a backup. You didn't play like a backup. And you could sit there and say, I'm not a backup. But you were. You were. All season long, you were supposed to be a backup. All you had to do is be a backup for one more season. Shut the fuck up and be a backup for one more season. Just do it.
Oh, wow.
You know? But seriously, isn't that not what he was supposed to be?
Oh, wow.
Am I wrong?
That was some harsh language.
Well, I mean, that's when he says what he says. Like, he sacrificed your talent. Shut up about sacrificing your talent. Just go out there and use your talent to be the backup and play the 25 minutes that you're supposed to play. You know this is your last year. You know you're leaving.
So this gets to the point of why the Celtics never succeeded.
It is absolutely. And
it was that they didn't realize they could all accentuate each other. It was that instead of playing with each other, they were playing against each other.
Exactly.
They were competing against each other for minutes, touches, opportunities, points, everything else, money, future money. And they didn't realize if they all just played together, they would have all looked so much freaking better.
That's it right
there. Than they did.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. If they just had done, and I honestly believe that this is why Brad Stevens kept trying to do it. Like, the big criticism of Brad Stevens all season long, why are you still doing this? Why are you still doing the same thing? Because he thought, I believe, the same thing that you just said, and that's absolutely 100% true, that if these guys can just get it through their thick skulls, that stop fighting each other, stop competing with one another, just take a second to understand that if you just do this thing and stop fighting what the coach is telling you, stop fighting this mentality that, oh, I'm better than what I'm being asked to do. If you just understood for a second that by working together and doing this thing that you're asked to do, everybody looks good. And you come out of the season as the guy who, man, that guy really, he didn't do as much as he could. I'm talking about Terry Rozier. Like, he had that playoff run, and then he was a good soldier. He did what he was asked, and I feel like he could just do so much more. And man, I want to get this guy who was on this winning team to do more, because I know he could do more. Versus, I'm not so sure I want to get Terry Rozier on my team because this team was disappointing. He couldn't handle being a backup. And then the instant that the season was over, he started talking about how he was hurt, how he sacrificed his own talent. And then he went on ESPN and did a day-long marathon of show after show after show after show. Like, at least Magic did one show and left. Terry Rozier was on every ESPN show. Like, he was almost the SportsCenter anchor at 11 o'clock. Like, that, he did all of that stuff and just spread the word about how he was so wrong.
Terry Van Pelt, son.
Seriously. So, and I'm very critical of Terry Rozier because it didn't have to be this way. Like, I think Terry Rozier had really one of the stupidest seasons in NBA history because he does have enough talent.
Stupidest seasons in NBA history.
Absolutely. Because he does have the talent to be a starting point guard.
You don't think that's a slight exaggeration of things?
No. No. I mean, I don't have no frame of reference to other stupid seasons, but like, what he did this past season was extraordinarily stupid. It was very stupid of him to play the way he played. Because if he had just played a normal way, if he had just played the way that he was asked to play, then he would have come out of this season an extraordinarily rich man. Like, the money that was waiting for him at the end of last season would have still been there. I don't know what what the money's going to be. I'll tell you what. If July, whatever, second, third, fourth comes around and Terry Rozier gets $15 million, then play this segment again. I'll be an idiot. I'll say I'm wrong. I think that Terry Rozier cost himself a ton of money. I don't think that Terry Rozier gets more than $10 million a year, if he gets that at all. I don't think that teams see him as a starting point guard. And if they do, and if he gets paid, and if it all works out for him, then I'm the moron. I'm the idiot. and call me all the names you want. Put it on freezing cold takes, everything. Just I deserve the roasting that I get. I don't think that I'm wrong. I think that Terry Rozier just cost himself because of his own attitude, because of his own unwillingness to play the role that he was asked to the best of his capability. Every time he had an opportunity to make a choice between being selfish and being a team player, I'd say whatever, 75% of the time he chose to be selfish, and that hurt the Celtics. And he's not the only one. I'm not blaming him exclusively for this, but because we're talking about the first take and all of that stuff, I think that he was definitely a sizable part of the problem.
Get him, John.
I mean, he's already unfollowed me over my takes about him, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he followed you on Twitter before, and then he unfollowed you because of this?
He followed me on Twitter all season long. And then, like, the second, like, after his first take appearance, and I said something critical, boom, unfollowed. So.
Adios, bruh.
Yeah. So.
You're done.
I'm done.
Oh, well. No more GMB Chump 12 for you.
Oh, well. That's how it goes.
Is that his Twitter name? I think it is, right?
I don't think so. I think it was
pretty close.
Well, I don't really know what his what is his Twitter handle. I know that's his Instagram handle. No, it's at @T_Rose3.
Oh yeah, I was very wrong.
Yeah, very wrong. But his Instagram is GMB Chum something or other. But
facts.
So, all right. Well, we did go for an hour talking about nothing. I think the structure keeps things tight because we stick to what we're supposed to talk about. When we're unstructured, we just rant and rave and
just let it fly, baby.
Yell at Terry Rozier for 3 straight minutes.
I want to point out, I didn't do the yelling.
I did.
Don't unfollow me, Terry. I don't think he followed me in the first place, so I'm good.
Oh boy. All right. Well, that's a podcast. We did a podcast. Hope you enjoyed that podcast. It's kind of all over the place. Oh boy. But, we'll hopefully have more things specifically to talk about. I don't even know. I think there are probably 3 conversations that we could have finished that might be open-ended right now. But I'm not going to go back and explore that. We're just going to end the podcast right now and tell you, if you're a new listener, man, hell of a show to start with. Hope you enjoyed it enough to subscribe. Go ahead and download that new Himalaya podcast app and subscribe to us on that. It's a great app. It helps you curate your podcast. You can find all sorts of great stuff there. It really is intuitive. It can help you out a lot in discovering new stuff. You can also subscribe if you like other avenues, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. You can even tell your smart speaker at home or in your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. And all of you regular listeners, if there's a place to give us a good written review and a 5-star rating, do it anywhere, please. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.